Digital Arena on the app, on your smartphone, on X, YouTube, and Facebook. The Sportscast World Cup coverage.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
The Sportscast, July 10th, 2026. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all your channels, YouTube, Facebook, X, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave a rating and review. It will help us out tremendously. Or you can also visit our website, thesportscast.net, and follow us on X and Instagram at thesportscast1, and check out our app, The Sportscast, for iOS. The quarterfinals have begun in the FIFA World Cup, one of my favorite rounds in the tournament. And we're seeing some big teams pop up, and the teams that didn't were favorites are not the favorites. So we'll see what happens. There's three more games, only one game that happened yesterday. And join us all the way from Northeast Maine, Hal Phillips. Welcome back.
I'm not in Northeast Maine. I'm in the Northeast of the U.S. I'm in South Central Maine, but always a pleasure, Santi, to be with you.
Exactly. How far are you from the greater city of Boston?
We're 2 hours north of Boston.
Gotcha.
And maybe an hour into Maine. So, and you can go for 6 hours. So it's a big state for, you know, by New England standards.
Yeah, exactly. Well, quarterfinals is my favorite part of the tournament. It's, for me, is the equivalent to the NFL divisional playoffs.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on the quarterfinals?
I did generally agree with you, but this tournament is new. We have a whole new round of 32, and I thought the round of 32 was, on the whole, way better than the round of 16, which makes no sense. The round of 32 really showed that this tournament format makes sense. We can get into that, you know, later, but the round of 16, I thought, was the sort of the beginning of what you associate with playoff hockey, where the games were very careful and or more careful, and the scores come down, and no one wants to make a mistake. And honestly, the quarterfinal is even more that way. And we saw that yesterday, not a wide open game by the French against Morocco from either party, and not particularly great viewing, I didn't think. Hopefully that turns around today with Spain and Belgium. And then tomorrow, everyone is looking forward to England, Norway. I don't know how either of those teams are going to hold back. Argentina, Switzerland, who knows? But I think the Swiss might beat them.
I think it's very possible. It's very possible. And seeing how Argentina's been playing the past two rounds, they've been grinding it out. Even with Cape Verde, they had to grind it out. But let me get back to the round of 32, because this is interesting, because everyone's keeping like that benchmark, quarterfinals. But that round of 32 and getting to round 16, you think is like the new benchmark? Reaching round 16 is good enough?
I don't know. I mean, it's all so new. I mean, we've never had a round of 32. But what I can tell you is that FIFA is going to take this 48-team format, which has been a success. Say what you want about FIFA, but it's been a success. And 64 is going to be even better, and they're going to do that for 2030. Here's the reason. If you extend the group phase and have a week between games, because you really can't avoid it, it's better for the players. It's better for the coaches, who can actually hold practice. And then it's sort of like a whole – that's the last stage of qualifying, is the group stage. Then you cut the field in half. That's the only problem with 48 teams, is that only 16 teams got eliminated, you know, out of 48. So this cuts the 64-team field, cuts the field in half, and then the you get right to the good stuff – in at the beginning of the final stage, the World Cup finals, and the round of 32 is a free-for-all. But, you know, what the teams think and how close to the vest they play, you know, is hard to know. Once you get into a knockout tournament of any size, you have teams saying, well, we can't beat them, so we're going to pack the, you know, the defense, we're going to park the bus, we're going to try to get this game to penalties. For whatever reason, we didn't see that in this round of 32, and it was awesome. The round of 16, I felt that several times. And, you know, the quarterfinal, I think Morocco would have taken penalty kicks in a heartbeat against France. But then everyone who plays France thinks that, because they're better than everyone else.
No, for sure. And, you know, to piggyback what you said, I think the key thing of this tournament, one of the positives, is that week-long break between each game. I think that, like, no teams are complaining about that because it brings a lot of rest. If you have a bruise, you can heal that up in a week.
Yeah.
So I think with 64 teams, I guess there might be a week between, I mean, obviously each game, but also in the second round. Well, not second round, but you know what I mean.
I wrote about this at siblingrivalry.halphillips.net. Check it out. It's really, you know, at this time, it couldn't be more counterintuitive to praise FIFA because they've behaved terribly as we expect them to. But this tournament format makes sense, and it makes sense for all the soccer reasons that I just spelled out and that you echoed. But also, you know what? It's really great having 48 teams or 64 teams in your country making merry for 6 weeks. I can't believe how good the attendance has been. I was dead wrong about that. All these tickets have been sold. All these people are spending money. And I can't help but think of what a German wrote, apparently. He said, if you want to discover America, don't read about it and don't read about the president. Get in a car and drive across it. That's what these people are doing. They're driving around our country. And you know what? They say, wow, they're not as crazy and as we thought. And this place is actually pretty cool. And we like Waffle House and blah, blah, blah. So all that says to me that FIFA was onto something. They have created more of a long-term, six-week football festival with expanded field. And I think, honestly, we're better for it.
Exactly. Well, we'll see it again soon. We'll talk about later that in the show. Sure. Let's go to the game that happened yesterday. Hal touched on it. Mbappe and France were lethal versus Morocco, reaching the World Cup semifinals. Mbappe scored a stunning goal after missing the first half penalty to move level with Lionel Messi in the race for Golden Boot. Mbappe scored the 60th, and then Osama Dembele made it 2-0 for Le Bleu. You talked about it. It was a close game. Morocco kept it close to the 60th minute. And France, the best player in the world, I think, Mbappe broke the lock.
The game was close. Morocco ventured very little outside their own half. They seemed content to do that. We can talk about why that is. But they I don't think they did not have a touch in the opposing box for 80 minutes. That they did not try to win this game in regulation time. Even when they were down 1-0, they couldn't bring themselves to attack France. They were so afraid of being counterattacked. And, you know, look, France is the favorite for a reason. I think people expected a little more from Morocco, and they came out. They started brightly, but then couldn't keep it up. And it was all one-way traffic in this game pretty much. And Morocco had a nice tournament. They were semifinalists last year, so they probably aren't particularly happy to go out at the quarterfinal level. Of course, they lost in the semis to France in 2022. So I don't think there's anybody who says France shouldn't have beat them then, and I don't think there's anyone who says France shouldn't have beaten them this time. They have the striker that couldn't play, Ismail Saibari, who is going to Bayern Munich. He's 18 years old. He's going to be a stud. Morocco is, of course, the reigning under-20 World Cup champion. This is a nation on the rise, but this crop of players cannot compete with France and their crop of players. Not right now.
Yeah, quite something. How this French team? Obviously, they're becoming more. The people are saying France are going to win it and everything. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, and look at the keep that graphic up. You've got four attacking players out of 11, and that is all they need. What does that mean? That means that the other seven or the six plus the goalkeeper can sit back and just foil you if you try to counterattack them. But their four attacking players are so good, and they bring that Barquero fellow off the bench. They've got more weapons. They can throw at you if they want to, but Olise, Mbappe, Dembele, and Doué, they're going to drive people crazy and score all by themselves. They really don't need Kone and Rabiot to come in and support them in any way, so they don't. So that's a very difficult thing. It usually takes five players to go forward and cause a team problems. They can do it with four, and that, you know, that's all they required against Morocco. And the, you know, I don't see anybody. Honestly, I think Spain will test them if Spain can beat Belgium today. And I think Argentina will, of course, test them if it turns out that they are playing in the final. England and Argentina would be a hell of a semi. But France just has too much. They just have too much.
Yeah, too much. Michael Olise, an incredible player, that midfield. He just came in to the team in the past 2 years. As Hal said, yeah, I agree. Anyone could be in that central midfield. Rabiot, Kone, I mean, it could be anyone playing in that area, section of the field. But yeah, kudos to Morocco. They had a good run to beat Holland, Netherlands. Then they beat the host, Canada, 3-0. Had a good run. Obviously, you know, this team will come back in the future, I imagine. So the rise of African football has gotten better, given that Egypt had a good run, which we'll talk about that little incredible run. Of course, lost against Argentina. So looking forward to it. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of days. You brought up Spain versus Belgium. Obviously, Spain beat Austria 3-0. They beat Portugal nearly 1-0. Now they're going against Belgium. Is it a big test for Spain? Is this the game where we're going to see Spain come out? Or are we going to have a narrow win as before?
This is the type of game that Spain dispatches very easily. Belgium is obviously playing well. We can come back. We're going to talk about the U.S. and Belgium, so I won't waste too many words on it. But Spain is really good, and they showed it in dominating Portugal. I mean, they really gave them nothing. And this is not a team that is physically big or strong. They don't have the attacking prowess of France, but they play as a unit. They have 8 Barcelona guys on this team. They know how to play together. And they're so skilled, it's almost frightening to think about. So I think they're going to handle Belgium with ease. When Belgium, you know, manhandled the United States, someone in my football chat said, "Oh, I can't wait to see them play Spain." And I'm like, "Spain is going to kick their ass. Don't just because we couldn't touch Belgium doesn't mean Spain isn't going to kick their ass." And I really believe that they will.
Yeah, no, yeah, quite something. Spain is playing without Nico Williams, so they've been hanging in there without him. Yamal has been playing, you know, decent, okay, maybe a B plus at worst. You know, obviously, like all Yarzabal has been okay, but bringing in that Arsenal player Marino has been okay with them as well.
They have attacking weapons as well, and you know this is useful for people to see too. You know, Olmo and Oyarzabal have been tremendous. Then you have Lamal on the right. You know, he may be the best player, attacking player in the world. Baena on the left.
Turns 19 this week.
19. Baena on the left has been just okay. And that's where Nico Williams would be playing. And they would be way more dangerous if they had him in the side. But, yeah, they bring in Marino. He scores goals. Pedri, Javi, Ferran, he just goes by Ferran. That's on his shirt. That's what I'm going to call him. They have a lot of options, and they're extremely tight in the back. They have played together. So Belgium is fascinating. I'll leave all my Belgium talk until we talk about the U.S. game, but they're going to take care of these guys. But look, they can attack with 4 guys and maybe 5 if you count Pedri. Rodri doesn't need to go forward, but he does. So they're a much more traditional team in terms of the division of labor going forward and checking back. They're different than France. France, I think, you know, is solid, but sort of pedestrian behind that top 4. They're obviously very skilled, but this team is more uniformly skilled and dangerous. So, yeah, I think Spain can give France all they can handle. I can't wait to see the match because no one has challenged France to date.
Yeah, there's only one team that I can name that could challenge France and Spain. They've beaten them. I think they're in a 6-game winning streak against France. So this is something that semifinal, potential semifinal, is going to come down to. It's going to be like one of the biggest games we'll see in this tournament.
So you're saying France has beaten Spain 6 straight times?
No, Spain did.
Spain has beaten France 6 straight times.
Yeah, 6 straight times.
Oh, I didn't even know that. That makes my argument even stronger.
Yeah, so I know France has gotten better because they played in the Euros and they lost against Spain. So we'll see what happens till then. But anyways, the another game of the week and everyone's looking forward to is Norway versus England. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Norway beat Brazil 2-0 and England beat Mexico 3-2. Both good games, I thought.
Great games.
Your thoughts over this matchup and what do you think?
I was stunned to see Norway just completely boss the game versus Brazil. It started that way. I was like, wow, look at them. And it just kept going. They never gave Brazil a sniff. They had the ball 60% of the time. They scored twice, could have scored more. They were just more dangerous. So kudos to them. Everyone thought that they were going to be an emerging team at this World Cup. They were right. This is a very competent team. They took off, I thought, the most dangerous guy they have on the flank, Nusa, and brought on another guy, Oscar Bob, and he was even better. So they're deep, and they're not just a one-dimensional team through Holland. They are very good. England, that was a very heroic effort against Mexico. I think we talked about it. Mexico had, you know, a puzzle in that game. Their fans, all of them, all 90,000 jammed into the Azteca. They're not going to allow Mexico to sit back and play defensive against anyone. They expect them to win and win with style. They beat Brazil at the 1999 Confederations Cup, 4-3. That's the kind of thing they want to see. England got, you know, 10 minutes of open play in the first half. They scored twice, and that essentially won the game for them, even though they did allow a second goal late. But England's, you know, England is not going to be able to play an open game against Norway. If they're smart, Norway will make them pick them apart. But will Norway be satisfied to do that? Here's the fun thing is that Holland is such a dominant player, but only the English have the defenders who really know how to play this guy to the extent that he can be marked. They're the ones who know. So it'll be very interesting how they set up and how they deal with Holland. A lot of players from Norway play in England. They're not the sort of unknown quantities that they would have been for the Brazilians, a different sort of way. So going to be a really fascinating match. And I know a friend of mine, Jeff, is flying down to Fort Lauderdale to watch it live. So God bless him.
That's a good pick. That's a good pick, game to pick.
I should say that Jeff actually went to the Norway-France match in Foxborough, and Holland didn't play, of course, and neither did Odegaard. No. So he responded by shelling out even more money and flying to Fort Lauderdale for the match. So, again, Godspeed to Jeff Kaschuler.
That's awesome. That'd be a good game. It's in Miami in the humidity, so we'll see what happens there. We'll definitely get the predictions a little later in the show with how things, what's going to happen. Let's go to the other game, Argentina versus Switzerland. Obviously, Argentina has been grinding out, as we said earlier. They beat Cape Verde, and then they beat Egypt barely as well. And then Switzerland, they beat Colombia in penalties, and previously they beat Algeria 2-0. Both different teams. Switzerland has not been to the quarterfinals since 1954. No. Argentina has been in a while to try to maintain that trophy. Your thoughts over this matchup? This could be an upset, I think, Hal mentioned earlier.
I'd be a fool to pick against Argentina in this game, but they've just not looked very good. They've needed everything to beat teams like Egypt and Cape Verde. At some point, I don't see them getting better as the tournament goes on like we did in 2022. Pretty much from the moment the knockout stage started, they've played better and better and better. They were taken to penalties by the Netherlands 4 years ago, but they were getting better. And by the time they were in the final, they were not unbeatable, but they were primed and ready. I don't see that happening with this team. It's an older team. It's a different team. Messi's older, even though he's been pretty darn great. Switzerland plays everyone tough. They're never going to give anything away. I thought they got lucky to not be beaten in regular time or in extra time against the Colombians, who generated more chances. So it's not like they create a lot of chances, even against a team like Colombia, you know, which is not as good a team as Argentina. I think we can agree. Fascinating matchup. It's those games are on at 5 and 9:30. I'm glad to see that. I've got stuff going on that day, and I thought I was going to have to carve out afternoon time for it. But it should be a fascinating match, and I wouldn't be surprised one bit if Switzerland beats them 1-0 or 2-1, because they're very veteran. They've got these guys together for a long time. They've got legit first division players from all over Europe in this team. They are not pushovers. But you know what? I'm not rooting for them, because I'm rooting for an England Argentina world, you know, semifinal, which would be,
we all do,
a war.
You know, it's funny how everything kind of pans out, because England went to Mexico. They faced their demons, Diego Maradona, from 40 years ago. Now, if they face Argentina again, it comes full circle. So I'm looking forward to that semifinal. But if Switzerland makes it, it is what it is. Switzerland has a good team. They beat France, I believe, 6 years ago in a Euro. But I know it's a different team era, but Switzerland has some grit. So we'll see. Both good games tomorrow and, of course, today. All right, let's go to the U.S. They lost against Belgium 2-1. Your thoughts over the game and what's next for the U.S.?
I don't know. It's so depressing. I think we all engaged in a bit of self-deception. We believed that this team had a fighting chance against a team like Belgium. which is, again, no pushover. They are maybe on the downside of a golden generation, but they've clearly got good young players. We know that because they beat our ass in this game. I remember I was late in the game. It was not going well. I think it was 3-1 by that point. We were down the second half. And I saw that Jeremy Doku and Lukaku were coming on for Belgium. And De Bruyne, who has started every game for them that he's been fit to play, you know, in 6 years, 37 matches. He didn't even get off the bench. And, when Doku comes on and Lukaku comes on and De Bruyne doesn't even play, I was like, I said to my chat, I was like, I think these guys might be better than us. And they clearly were. And I think at bottom, that is really what this was about. But, you know, the intervention of Donald Trump and FIFA in this match, I don't think you can gauge how much harder that made it for our team. They basically turned the entire globe against us. They certainly riled up our opponent to beat the hell out of us, which they did. It was a no-win situation once Trump got involved. And, you know, think what you want about his politics. That was just bad, bad sportsmanship. And I'm talking about trying to help us win. That did not help us win.
Quite something. Exiting the round of 16, How would you rate the U.S. From this tournament? Was it a success? What grade would you give it?
It's a B-. It's what we expected them to be. I don't think anyone thought that the U.S. was a top 10 team and was favored to be a quarterfinalist. For every team between, you know, ranked, and I'm not putting on any great stock in the world, you know, the FIFA ranking. I'm just saying, as a straw man in an argument, the teams ranked 9 to 16. You know, it's a battle for them to get through to a quarterfinal because they have to beat a team that is better than them or ranked better than them. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, that's how it works. You know, did Mexico have a bad tournament? Well, they couldn't get into the quarterfinal. Canada really never had a chance, but they failed at the same level. So to say that we are a failure because we can't get into the quarterfinals, I don't see it that way. I thought that, you know, of the teams that went out in the quarterfinals, I would take my chances against any of them. I guess what was difficult was that in the course of this tournament, the first two games of this tournament and the last two friendlies before the tournament, it looked like we were figuring things out and that Pochettino had instilled us and aligned us in a way that had found something that had unlocked an athleticism and a way to play. For this team to be successful at the quarterfinal level. So clearly that wasn't true or not true enough because Belgium is not going to go on to the semifinal, I don't think, and they beat the hell out of us. The U.S. has a problem playing European teams. This is the problem. When we play Argentina, when we play Paraguay, when we play Colombia, we hold our own. I mean, we lost that semifinal, that last group game to Uruguay in the Copa America in 2024, you know, we played pretty good. And I think we lost 2-1. There's no great shame in that, but we play those teams way better than we play decent European teams. For whatever reason, the way they play just destroys us. And what I found interesting was I watched the friendly from March, you know, with Belgium against the U.S. And there was no aura around the U.S. team at that time. Things were actually looking pretty dark. Because Portugal beat the hell out of us too, another European team. Right. But that game on Monday was so similar to the game we played against Belgium in March. A lot of the players were different for Belgium. Some of the players were different for us, but it played out the same way. Yeah. We hung in there, we scored, and then they just scored three and it was over. And then they just did whatever they want. We looked like we never adjusted to the speed of the game. And we looked like not confident and scared. We wanted to get rid of it. You ever watch a high school game where one team is better than the other? The bad team just gets that ball off their feet as fast as they can. That was how we played against this team. Even Sergiño Dest, he looked like he'd been drugged. I mean, right. He was so good for us in this tournament. He couldn't do anything. It was weird. Some of it was the political situation that took place with the red card. Some of it was they're just better than us. But some of it was we just weren't ready to play our best game against the best opponent.
Right. So what do you think is next for the coach? Do you think should Pochettino have another contract extension? Because we talked about this before a few episodes that he I mean, he has offers from big clubs, so I wouldn't be surprised he goes to an AC Milan or whatever. But do you think, you know, Poch will come back, or do you think we'll get someone else? Or
I don't. I think that Pochettino will take the AC Milan job or something like that, and he'd be a fool not to.
Right.
I think that the Federation hiring Steve Cherundolo to be the under-23 coach for the next Olympics in 2028 tells you what they're doing.
Yeah,
they're gonna hire, they're going to hire someone to come in here and play friendlies and develop these younger players like Kevin Sullivan, this 16-year-old. I mean, they're going to play some friendlies, and they're going to let the European clubs develop our talent, which is what they should be doing. That's how teams get good, even South American teams. They send all their young players to play and get trained up by academies in Europe. So this is one reason why we have trouble with European teams. They're really good. How many teams are in the quarterfinal from Europe? Six. There's your answer. So that's what I think they'll do. I think they will find some interim period, interim coach for the next 2 years. And then if things go well with Cherundolo before the next cycle, they will promote him to be the coach for 2030. That's speculative, but Cherundolo is a respected guy. He played in Germany for a long time. He gets that ethos, and I think he's well-liked. We'll see.
Yeah, and he coached LAFC, so a lot of professional experience. Yeah, you're right. Would be a good plan if put an interim coach for now, then have Cherundolo come in, become the head coach by 2028 or something like that, after the Olympics or whatever.
The difficult thing is you're not going to have any kind of tournament test for whoever is the interim coach. So if you hire somebody and it goes really well, when do you have an opportunity to fire him so that you can hire Steve Cherundolo?
It's tricky. Like the Olympic coach cannot be the men's senior coach either. I don't know that.
I think that, we're talking about 2 years from now,
right?
Before World Cup qualifying begins, basically for 2030, and we will have to qualify, but it will be a 64-team tournament. So I don't think it's going to be a difficult qualification. And as we've discussed, there'll probably be six spots available to CONCACAF, and Mexico will be on one side, the U.S. will be on the other side. So I don't think it's going to be too taxing. How do you judge an interim coach? And you can't just name Cherundolo the coach now, because they've not done that. They've already given him the Olympic team, and he's going to have to earn it, which is probably smart, because what if it goes badly? What if they crash out? Yeah, and then they can go and hire someone else with a bigger name and more capability. I thought Poch did a great job with this team. You know,
right.
He did
most wins of any U.S. coach.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he took a lot of heat. He changed the way they played. I thought he showed great faith in them to play a 3-5-2, and it didn't collapse. I thought he trusted them to try things, and he had confidence in their ability to be professionals and to adjust. And until Belgium, they played that role really well. Again, I recap the Belgium game at, you know, siblingrivalry.halphillips.net if people want to read it. But it's it went badly for some reasons that we were expecting. We all knew that Tim Ream was old. We've talked about it on this show. We knew that it was an accident waiting to happen, and he was beaten for two goals very badly in that thing. Right. We knew that Fries, the goalkeeper, was untested, and that at some point it was going to come back to haunt us, and it did. So, you know, if those things don't happen, you know, that's a 1-1-2-1 game into the late stages, and maybe we feel better about ourselves. But that did not happen. Life is not like that, and here we are.
I am looking forward to Kevin's Sullivan, because I think he'll be in the fray, in the mix, the next 4 years. I got a feeling.
We got a lot of good young players.
And
we've developed a lot of good young players through Pochettino. Look at Alex Freeman. Look at Chris Richards is 23 years old. I mean, our defense is looking good. You know, the Freeze will be better. We'll have more goalie options, and we're going to have a lot of attacking options. So, look, it's a new team to be born. I think Pulisic and Ream and are going to be gone, and maybe McKennie will be gone. But, you know, Tyler Adams isn't going anywhere. He's a young man.
He's a good guy. Yeah, good player. Predictions, Spain versus Belgium in L.A. How? What's your score?
3-0 Spain.
Oof, a lot of goals.
Yeah.
A lot of goals. I think Spain 1-0 or 2-0. So we'll see.
Okay.
Norway versus England in Miami. I think this might go to PKs.
No, I think England will win 3-1. Now, do you know the great history, the great historical analogy here?
No.
1066, we know the Normans came over and invaded England from France, right?
Right.
Well, 3 weeks before that happened, King Harold of England had to fight off the Norwegian Vikings north, way in the north of England, and they won that battle. It's called the Battle of Stamford Bridge, another great soccer connection. So Harold has to literally double march all the way to the south coast to fight the Normans, who are French, and they lost that battle. And so this is a replay of Norway and England is a replay of the Battle of Stamford Bridge. And if England wins, which I think they will, they get to play France at some point, just like back in 1066.
Quite something. We'll see what happens. If history repeats itself, let's go to Kansas City. Yeah. Argentina versus Switzerland. It feels like Kansas City, it's like a home ground for Argentina. But who do you got for this matchup?
I just can't see Argentina losing this game. I think they'll win 1-0.
They'll grind it out 1-0. What's up with Argentina? You think they're just a little bit older team and that's why they've been hurting, or it's just, I don't know.
I don't know. They've got some guys who are old, and Christian Romero, who I think is their best center back, right, is just coming off an injury. They do have good young attacking players, but not a ton out of the midfield. Look what Argentina has successfully done. They have built a team around Messi that, yeah, when Messi was in his prime, and, you know, he doesn't have to be in his prime, he won the last World Cup at, what, 35?
Mm-hmm.
It works. They have enough talent all around him, and they supplicate their games to suit him. Portugal doesn't really do that, you know, and basically playing Ronaldo was just an anchor around their necks. They got nothing out of him, no pressing, no check back work. If he didn't score, he really does nothing. But I don't feel that when Argentina plays with Messi. He doesn't come back and play defense, but they've built the whole team around knowing the fact that Messi's not going to come back and help them on defense. And he's not going to press anybody far up the field. They know that. And they've accommodated it years ago. So they've got it down to a science. They are going to get older. I just want to see England and Argentina play in the semifinal. Too. I think it'd be an incredible spectacle.
That'd be a great storyline. Anyways, we're out of time. Hal, what is the best way to reach you online?
Siblingrivalry.halphillips.net is my website. That is also my handle on Threads and Instagram, where I'm always sharing fun content about the book, but also about the World Cup and all sorts of soccer matters. So check in.
And you can reach us at thesportscast.net, also on X, thesportscast1, and Instagram, thesportscast1. We'll be following along the World Cup coverage, live tweeting it. Hopefully today and tomorrow will be another good part of history. Hal, thanks for coming on to the Sportscast.
Always my pleasure, Santi.
And this was your update.